This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Wahib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Now, the state of Nigeria right now is really, to a large extent, very, very disheartening for a lot of Nigerians back at home and overseas. We're really disillusioned.
That's Sunday Bitrus, National President of Zumuntu Association USA, an organization looking to advance the progress of young Nigerians and Africans. Details coming up also. In Haiti, news that the United Nations has authorized a one-year deployment of a Kenya-led force to the country to help quell violent gangs is dominating conversations. And a charity group in Zimbabwe is raising funds for a basic product that can be critical for people living with albinism. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Nobel Peace Prize winner Dr. Denis Mukwege announced he will run for president in the Democratic Republic of Congo's election in December. Opinions on his candidacy are divided among the people of the Eastern DRC, where he was born. Reporter Zanem Neti Zaidi has more from Goma.
The winner of the 2018 Nobel Peace Prize, Dr. Denis Mukwege, says his announcement is in response to the public's desire for a leader who can bring change. He says his country is certainly in a bad way. There is a high risk that it could disappear from the map of the world, but this fate is not inevitable. Tomorrow will be too late, so he says the time is now, and that's why he's contesting the elections. His candidacy is welcomed by many in the east of the Democratic Republic of Congo. Many appreciate the 68-year-old doctor's successful efforts to end sexual violence as a weapon of war, his criticism of impunity for war crimes, and his reputation as a strident government critic. But some voters are perplexed, including Lawrence Muhira, a young student at the University of Goma. She fears that the new path now taken by the man who repairs women, as he's known, will make him forget his long-standing struggle. She says, you are well aware that our country has been characterized by conflict for over two decades, and women have always been the main victims. Denis Mukwege is one of those who have never stopped supporting victims until today. I think that his involvement in politics will impact his fight for the well-being of these women victims, because it's often said that it's impossible to serve two masters at once. According to the young political analyst Leonard Rwangano, Denis Mukwege's reputation in politics, which is still clean, would only help him win the presidential elections if the opposition came together and selected him their single candidate. If not, nothing will go right for him. He says, in the current climate, Mukwege is out of luck. He is saying this not because he is not popular, but because the opposition is divided. The outgoing president will face between two and five opponents, and if all them unite and all opposition supporters vote for the one candidate, then he could win, especially as he has never committed atrocities like the others. The candidacies of Denis Mukwege and Martin Fayulu could already be submitted to the Independent National Electoral Commission on Wednesday, a process that is in its final week. For VOA Africa, I'm Zanem Neti Zaidi in Goma.
DRC President Felix Tshisekedi, Martin Fayulu, who leads the Engagement for Citizenship and Development Party, and Moise Katumbi, head of the Ensemble pour la République party, also will be candidates in the December 20th presidential election. For the first time in U.S. history, a Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, who is second in the presidential line of succession, has been removed from office. Facing a challenge from his own party, Republican Kevin McCarthy lost a motion to oust him by a vote of 216 to 210. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson joins us now to explain this historical development and what it means. Welcome to African News Tonight, Catherine.
Good to be with you.
So first, briefly explain to us, to our audience, what the U.S. Speaker of the House does, and tell us what led to Speaker McCarthy's ouster.
Right. Well, U.S. Speaker of the House is an incredibly powerful position, the second in the line of presidential succession, the leader of the U.S. House of Representatives, and one of the key members of the entire U.S. Congress. And what we saw here yesterday on Capitol Hill was something that we've never seen before, a Speaker of the House removed from power, and not just removed from power, but because his own party doesn't trust in him. And because the majority of Republicans in the U.S. House is so slim, it only took 8 Republicans to vote with all of the other Democrats to remove him from power. So really a historic moment here on Capitol Hill, and we're trying to figure out how to move forward.
So I'm sure you know the House is now beginning a frantic race to elect a new speaker. Who will replace him?
Well, that is very much up for debate here right now. We've had a couple of new candidates just this morning. Representative Steve Scalise, who is very well thought of among Republicans on Capitol Hill, but who also happens to be battling a serious case of blood cancer right now. He's thrown his hat into the ring. He announced he's a candidate. We're also hearing from Jim Jordan, who is a powerful member of the House Judiciary Committee, a more conservative member of the Republican Party. He announced that he would be running as well. We expect to have many more candidates as the days and weeks go on. We've even heard from one member who says that they will nominate former President Donald Trump to serve as Speaker. Because remember, you don't have to serve in the U.S. Congress to be the Speaker of the House.
VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson, thank you for your input.
You're so welcome.
In Haiti, news that the United Nations has authorized a one-year deployment of a Kenya-led force to the country to help quell violent gangs is dominating conversations. Wensley Johnson, a construction worker in Haiti, said, "It's like God heard Haiti's prayer and he's sending help." Johnson had to flee his home this year after gangs pillaged the community where he lived. Carpenter Peter John said he hoped the Kenyan reinforcement would come before January to stop the murders and rapes gang members commit. More than 200,000 Haitians have lost their homes to gangs who set fire to communities and rape and kill residents in a bid to wrestle territory from rival gangs. In the meantime, John said, Haitians will take care of gangs the only way they know how, though a violent uprising known as Bawe Kale, which has killed an estimated 350 people since it began in April. The Associated Press says the United Nations estimates more than 2,400 people were killed in gang violence from January through mid-August this year, with nearly 1,000 kidnapped and more than 900 wounded. Pope Francis has opened a synod, a meeting of Roman Catholic bishops from all over the world, which this time includes lay people and women. As Sabina Castelfranco reports from Rome, a number of thorny issues are on the agenda over the next few weeks, all behind closed doors.
With a solemn mass in St. Peter's Square Wednesday, Pope Francis formally opened a four-week meeting that gathers 365 select members with voting rights, including lay people and not just bishops. It will also see women voting for the first time. No binding decisions will be made, but controversial topics are up for discussion at the closed-door meeting held in Vatican City's Paul VI Hall. They include the role of ordinary Catholics, including women, in decision-making processes, whether priests should be allowed to marry, and the Church's teachings on divorce and LGBTQ issues. The theme of the meeting is For a Synodal Church, Communion, Participation, Mission. Commentators say it is likely to expose deep divisions between liberals and conservatives in the Roman Catholic Church. In his homily at Wednesday's Mass, Pope Francis said church leaders at the gathering do not need a purely natural vision made up of human strategies, political calculations, or ideological battles. The Pope added, "We are not here to carry out a parliamentary meeting or a plan of reformation. The synod," he said, "is not a parliament." Before the start of discussions, five conservative cardinals called on Pope Francis to reaffirm the Church's doctrine on same-sex couples and the ordination of women. In a letter, they presented five questions and expressed their concern that some in church leadership are no longer proposing sound doctrine, but teachings according to their own likings. In a written response, the pontiff steered away from providing the yes-no answers the cardinal requested, and observers say he appeared to be open to the possibility of blessing same-sex couples. The 86-year-old pontiff said that we cannot be judges who only deny, reject, and exclude. He wrote, "Pastoral prudence must adequately discern whether there are forms of blessing requested by one or more persons that do not convey a mistaken concept of marriage." At Wednesday's Mass, Pope Francis said the synod aims to reaffirm a church that looks mercifully at humanity and is united and fraternal, that listens and dialogues, a church that blesses and encourages. Ahead of the meeting, Vatican officials said no media would be allowed, and attendees were instructed to not speak to reporters about the discussions. Sabina Castelfranco, VOA News, Rome.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There, you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. Africa's largest economy, Nigeria, has struggled since the Muhammadu Buhari administration as youth unemployment, inflation, and debt are at an all-time high and continue to climb. Buhari's successor, Bola Tinubu, came to office in May in a disputed election and implemented early reforms such as the removal of a fuel subsidy and devaluation of the Naira. Sunday Bitrus is the national president of Zumanta Association USA, an organization looking to advance the progress of young Nigerians and Africans at home and abroad. He says Nigerians of all ages are disillusioned with the country's progress.
Now, the state of Nigeria right now is really, to a large extent, very, very disheartening for a lot of Nigerians back at home and overseas. We're really disillusioned with the state of things, both in terms of the fact that we are not really making the kind of progress that we should be making due to so many missteps that have been taken, both willingly and unwillingly.
So, Sunday, Africa's largest economy has long been in free fall since the Muhammad Buhari administration dates as youth unemployment, inflation, and debt are at an all-time high and continue to climb. And Buhari's successor, Bola Tinubu, is trying to do something about it. One of the things he's trying to do, like reforms, is the removal of a fuel subsidy and devaluation of the Naira. How do you rate Tinubu so far with his reform plans?
from pronouncements that we've both listened to and heard through other media outlets, it is very obvious that they have not done the due diligence that would allow them to really move the country forward with the kind of policies they've enacted from the very beginning. I think a lot of things were done hastily without adequately evaluating the pros and the cons of taking such decisions and making such pronouncements. For example, in terms of the free fall of the Naira, a country that does not produce anything to sell in the global market really cannot create any value. And as a result, the currency would definitely suffer. If you've devalued the currency, it is challenging to maintain the status of the Naira the way it is and at the rate of production that they have in the country. Removing subsidy, for example, is another major factor that has been affected. As a matter of fact, I'm getting to understand right now that actually there is some form of subsidy, because if left alone to the market forces, the cost of crude oil, the cost of fuel or petrol or whatever they call it in Nigeria, is going to continue to skyrocket, and it's going to be very difficult for people to manage it. So there is some kind of subsidy that the government is also having that is in place right now to support the market and to ensure that people are benefiting from the country. But even at that, wages are way below ordinary and everyday living costs. The cost of a bag of rice right now is well over 40,000 Nigerian naira. People are getting paid less than that as part of their minimum wage. How do people survive? They have school fees, they have cars, they have families, they have kids in schools, they have homes to pay, they have rent and everything. So it becomes extremely difficult for people in the country to continue to survive. So the policies, to a large extent, are ill thought of and misinformed.
And lastly, Sunday, Nigeria's major labor unions have suspended the strike they had planned after President Bola Tinubu raised civil service pay and promised other measures to help financially struggling Nigerians. This kind of patchwork, is it a real solution, just giving raise to a certain segment and then trying to move forward?
No, it is not sustainable. It is not sustainable. And I say that with a very, very heavy heart, because one, you're thinking about it. They're thinking about it in the sense of only attending to government workers. At initial, it was, in fact, a matter of fact, they use a derogatory term to define the number or the types of civil servants that would eventually benefit from this increase. And as a matter of fact, the salary increase is temporary. The salary increase they want to implement is going to be mainly for government workers. What happens to the woman on the street? What happens to the man who doesn't have a job, or families who are scraping by or are living below the poverty line? Now, they're also saying that they're going to rely on the social register, the National Social Register, which in itself is questionable. So there is a lot that needs to be done. But unfortunately, what you are seeing right now, both in terms of implementing some of these types of policies, is a product of incompetence that you can see to from a large extent. Again, not necessarily because there are no people or the people that can do the work in terms of helping them achieve maximum results are not there, but it's simply because they are turning a blind eye to the kind of resources that Nigeria has, both abroad and in Nigeria, to help them achieve those maximum results. The reasons behind that, we still do not know, and we are still watching and hoping that things will turn out for good for Nigeria going forward.
Sunday Bitrus is the national president of Zumanta Association USA. He talked to me from the U.S. state of Maryland. A charity group in Zimbabwe is raising funds for a basic product that can be critical for people living with albinism, sunscreen. The group called the Noble Hands of Zimbabwe released a report in September saying one in three people with albinism in Zimbabwe die of skin cancer before the age of 40, including children as young as 8. Columbus Mavunga has more from Harare, Zimbabwe.
A September report by the charity organization, the Noble Hands Zimbabwe, says one in three people living with albinism in Zimbabwe die before they reach 40 due to skin cancer. Now Marvelous Chuma, a musician with albinism, is helping non-profit group raise funds for a simple but life-saving resource, sunscreen.
The situation is bad, especially in rural areas.
She says Many people with albinism stay in the rural areas, and most of them spend the better part of the day in the sun working in the fields. That exposes their skin and it gets damaged. They don't have the chemicals to tame the heat so that the skin is not burned off. Some don't know what sunscreen is. They never used it, says Chuma. Loveness Mainato is a mother of four, two of them living with albinism.
So the sunscreen lotions are expensive, the cheapest tube being $15 per 200 milliliter tube. So it has been quite difficult to have access to sunscreen lotions.
Mainato hopes things will improve now that the government-funded University of Zimbabwe is manufacturing sunscreen lotions. Joichi Famba is a nano-pharmaceutical scientist and professor at the University of Zimbabwe. He says their lotion will protect people and cost less.
But we have also made sure that the price is quite comparable to what's on the market. In Zimbabwe, a typical sunscreen, for example, the leading brands, I can't mention the names, but they cost between $10 and $20 per bottle. But our unit of SolarGuard is just going for about $5 to $6, which is quite competitive, which is quite affordable to people that have albinism.
According to the World Health Organization, albinism is a hereditary condition in which little or no melanin is produced, causing a lack of pigmentation in the skin, eyes, and hair. Lack of pigmentation, which protects the skin from radiation from the sun, can leave one vulnerable to skin cancer, says the UN Health Agency. Dr. Trevor Kanyowa of the WHO in Zimbabwe says they should limit their exposure to the sun and get professional care.
And they are also encouraged to have a look at themselves, to make a regular self-assessments of their skin. Are they developing any unhealthy patches or lumps, something that may worry them? And I think also one of the things that they can do at the end is also to seek professional care so that they can be examined and taken care of medically.
Early detection allows professionals to better treat diseases such as skin cancer, says the WHO, resulting in fewer deaths. Columbus Mavunga, VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
Mongi Bawendi, Louis Bross, and Alexei Ekimov have won the 2023 Nobel Prize in Chemistry for the discovery and synthesis of quantum dots. The dots illuminate computer monitors and television screens and are used by doctors to map tumors. The Nobel Committee for Chemistry said the three scientists in the United States succeeded in producing particles so small that their properties are determined by quantum phenomena. The prize is awarded by the Royal Swedish Academy of Sciences, and the recipients will share a cash award of about $990,000. Bawendi was born in Paris and grew up in France, Tunisia, and the U.S. He teaches at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. American-born Bross is a professor emeritus at Columbia University. Ekimov, originally from the former Soviet Union, is the chief scientist at Nanocrystals Technology Incorporated, based in New York State in the U.S. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Nabil Biagio, and our engineer, Nashwan Kale, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.